Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today we conclude our series of conversations with the candidates vying to become Tulsa's next mayor. This next Tuesday is Election Day in the municipal elections and state party runoffs. Earlier, I spoke with candidates Greg Robinson, Craig Immel, and Ty Walker. We also reached out repeatedly to the Ken Reddick campaign. After initially agreeing, he did not respond to our request for an interview. You can hear those interviews at our website, publicradiotulsa.org. But today we conclude our series with the incumbent mayor of the city of Tulsa, G.T. Bynum, who is seeking his second term. Bynum is a native Tulsan. He served as a policy staffer in the U.S. Senate for Senators Don Nichols and Tom Coburn before returning to the city and becoming a city councilor for District 9, where he served for 8 years prior to becoming mayor in 2016. You can learn more about his candidacy and his positions at his website, gtbynum.com. G.T. Bynum is my guest today on Studio Tulsa. Mayor Bynum, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me back on.
Yeah, of course, we've been asking other candidates why they're running for mayor, so I'll just ask you, why are you seeking a second term?
Sure. I ran 4 years ago because I felt like we were underachieving as a city. I saw other cities around the country that were making these great leaps forward in economic development and quality of life. And it was because they were working as a region to compete with other cities around the country and around the world. And then I saw us here in Tulsa spending all of our time fighting with each other. You know, the mayor versus the council, the city versus the suburbs, the city versus the county. And I realized we were missing out on the real playing field, the real competition, which was national and international. And so I ran for mayor for two main reasons. One was that issue that I wanted us to be focused on being a globally competitive city. And two, I wanted us to address the issues of racial disparity that I felt had been largely unaddressed by the city government for more than a century in Tulsa. And after I got in and we started working on those ranges of issues, you realize that when you're focusing on being globally competitive, competing with the best cities in the world, the things between where Tulsa was in 2016 and where we needed to be to compete with those cities are major changes, major challenges. If they were easy things, somebody would have already done them. So we've started that work in the last 4 years. But the big changes that we're putting in place, whether that's around public safety or economic development or infrastructure or around racial disparity, these are not things that you do in a couple years. And we need time to follow through on them. And that's why I'm seeking a second term, to follow through on what we've started.
Do you feel like the city is more competitive on a global scale as a city?
Oh, I mean, there's no question in my mind that we are. You know, one of the things that I did not appreciate when I was talking about our need to have that focus 4 years ago was that all the ingredients for success were there. We just weren't competing on the right playing field. And so once we reoriented that focus and shifted away from just the constant bickering between, you know, the mayor and the city council or the city and the county or the city and the suburbs, and instead talked about working together to compete with other cities, all of a sudden, within a 3.5 year period of time, we've brought the two largest new employers in the history of the city to town, in Amazon and Green Hat Group. We've brought the single largest economic development investment in the history of the city to town, in American Airlines. We brought over $1 billion in private investment into North Tulsa, in particular, over the last 3.5 years. And I think much of that is attributable to the fact that our energy is being spent on promoting Tulsa and working together to bring great employers and great employees to our city rather than fighting with each other. So I absolutely think we're in a better position. I remember, you know, when our very first debate 4 years ago, and I said, I don't want to be competing with Broken Arrow, Owosso, and Jinx. I want to be working with them to compete with Austin, Denver, and Chicago. And this lady came up to me at the end of the debate, and in total sincerity, she goes, "You are so sweet to think that we can compete with cities like that." And now here we are. I mean, we just finished a competition with, we were in the final running with Austin for the Tesla facility, and we came in second place in that. Austin came in second place the last time Tesla located a facility. And we've put Tulsa on that national and international map where we're talking with some of the most exciting companies in the whole world right now about locating in our city.
You know, when you talk about this, I have to just keep thinking, you know, when you look at our position in the Sun Belt, we are like one of the few metropolitan areas that have not seen huge growth over the last 30 to 40 years, as opposed to most every other major city in the Sun Belt. Do you think it was just that bickering, that lack of unified work to promoting the city and being competitive that has held Tulsa back?
Well, you know, a lot of the time we talk about Oklahoma City from like the sibling rivalry standpoint, but I have nothing but respect for OKC. And I think that the thing that they woke up to about a decade before we did is this recognition that the competitive landscape is national and international these days. It's not city versus suburb fighting over sales tax growth. And all of our energy as a city government, it's because we're in the only state in the nation that forces cities to be relying on sales tax for operations that we had those fights. But I think we lost out on so much growth when we had so much potential here because we were fighting the wrong fight for all of those years. So I absolutely think that that's one of the major factors for why you didn't see the kind of growth here that you have seen in other cities. When people talk about Oklahoma City and they say, oh, they've done so great because they have the Thunder or because of Bricktown, the Thunder and Bricktown are strategies that Oklahoma City's put in place to make them more competitive for national and international competition. And now in Tulsa, we're doing the same thing. And we started adding those quality of life elements, but we weren't using them and marketing them with the right people. Again, we were competing with our neighbors when we should have been working with our neighbors to compete with other cities.
Well, the immediate priority for the next term of whoever is the mayor will be the continuing response to the pandemic and how to balance public health and the local economy. And I have to say, through the course of this pandemic, you've received both praise and criticism from both sides of those who want stricter health protocols and those who want fewer restrictions through the course of these last few months. I mean, alternately, praise and criticism. I know you've talked about this in your COVID-19 briefings, but what informs your decision-making on balancing these two important aspects of the city?
I mean, the greatest resources for me in making these decisions, I would say, probably come from three primary resources. One is the team at the Tulsa Health Department and the data and information that they provide that really helps us understand the virus as it is here in Tulsa right now. There are lots of national practices that you can look at, but knowing what the reality is here in Tulsa is so important. The second big group are our healthcare systems here, who are out in the field treating those who have contracted it, and they know better than anyone the extent of the severity of it here in Tulsa. On any given day, they can tell us how severe our hospitalizations are, which is really, you know, the worst extent. That's when it is at its worst, is when somebody has to be hospitalized. So I spend a lot of time talking with our healthcare systems here in Tulsa. And then the third one, which for me is just very important, as much as anything, to make sure that I'm thinking things through, is Mayor Holt over in Oklahoma City. Because, you know, a lot of the time people want to talk about what the governor is doing, but the governor has to be making decisions about somebody who lives in a high rise in Tulsa or Oklahoma City and weigh that in the same way that they would somebody who's living on 500 acres by themselves out in the panhandle on a ranch. And that's a very hard comparison to make. But when you have the two major areas of population density in our state, in the Tulsa Metro and the OKC Metro, I've found tremendous value in having that regular daily communication with Mayor Holt over there to understand what they're seeing on the ground, what they're thinking about, and to share what we're thinking about. And Mayor Holt and I, very early on in this, agreed that we wanted our two cities to really be in lockstep on this throughout the pandemic so that folks who live in either city are experiencing similar restrictions when they're necessary and rollbacks when those are possible. But I think those are the three primary ones. And you're right. I mean, there's criticism, and there has been from the very beginning, about what we should be doing. And when you look at even the mask ordinance that we put in place, now there are some folks who say we waited too long, even though we just waited until the healthcare system and Dr. Dark told us we should do it. Or there are people who are saying that this is all a big hoax and we shouldn't have masks at all, even though every healthcare system CEO in town and the Oklahoma State Medical Association, the Oklahoma Nurses Association, all asked us to put that ordinance in place to preserve the integrity of our healthcare system. So it is, I'm a big believer in collecting as many ideas as I can before I make a decision. And that's been an ongoing challenge in this environment when things can happen very rapidly. But it's been crucial for me in making decisions to hear from the broadest range of experts that I can.
Before we move on, those two camps, which are pretty much diametrically opposed, a frequent criticism on both of their responses is a perception that you're somehow trying to thread a needle and balancing their concerns, as opposed to maybe calculating a response, as opposed to acting in what in your heart you feel is like the best thing to do at that particular moment.
Sure.
How can you reassure folks that that's not in your calculations, or does it frankly enter your calculations?
Well, this is, I would say there are two thoughts on that. One, especially on the mask ordinance, it's a great case study. That was one where probably 4 to 6 weeks before we ultimately decided to move forward with it, I've been very clear that whenever Dr. Dart tells us that we should do it, we will. And he held off for a while, and the reason he held off is that in anything with this pandemic, you cannot compare the United States with, let's say, China. Cities in the United States, we do not have armies at our disposal to go and enforce a restriction. We have to build awareness and buy-in within the community when we put these restrictions in place. We do not have martial law in place to do it otherwise. And so I know that Dr. Dart's concern about doing the mask ordinance too early, and I shared it, was that you can go out and tell everybody to do something one day, but if they don't perceive that there is an actual threat and that there's a need to do it, they're not going to do it. And then when you actually have a real threat and a need to do it, they won't listen to you. This is exactly, by the way, what Dr. Deborah Birx told us when I was in a meeting with her on Sunday, that she really believes local communities have to make these decisions based on what they're seeing on the ground to maintain credibility with their citizens so that when they have to act and the need is there, they can. And since we've put the mask ordinance in place, you've seen a decrease in the number of cases and a decrease in the number of hospitalizations. And I think that's not just attributable to the fact that there's more people wearing masks, though I think that that is definitely a big factor. But I think the other big factor is that through the process of having that discussion and going through the council adoption of that, we raised awareness in the community that our doctors and our hospitals say this is a real concern for them and that they cannot sustain the rate of increase in cases that we're seeing at this rate. So it isn't a matter of, you know, a political decision. It's a matter of building community understanding and buy-in so that it's effective when you put that kind of order in place.
My guest today is G.T. Bynum, mayor of Tulsa, seeking his second term as mayor of the city of Tulsa, as we continue our series of conversations with Tulsa's mayoral candidates today on Studio Tulsa. Well, if we can put the pandemic aside, which I think really will not happen until there's a vaccine and things change greatly, you mentioned the two categories that you said led to you running to mayor, but what is the most important priority or perhaps strategy for you to confront and address as mayor if you're reelected?
Well, I think the single most important thing that we can do here in Tulsa is make our city economically competitive on a global stage. I mean, that's the transition that we're going through right now. I believe, as somebody who loves the history of our city, I really think that we've gone through three big waves of growth in our history as a city. First one in the 20s and 30s when we really became a city. That's when you see so much of what is now downtown Tulsa built. It's when we built the Spavinaw Waterline and built one of the first airports anywhere in the world. And then you had the 60s and the 70s when we really became a metro area. We built a highway network that connected us with the suburbs in a way that we never had. We built our city-county health system and city-county library system. And the third big wave of growth that has occurred in our city's history is happening right now. And it's that we're becoming a global city. And we've tried to really tap into that and embrace that and help Tulsa grow through that by, one, focusing, as we talked about a few moments ago, about making us a more economically competitive city on a global stage, bringing companies from all around the world to Tulsa, but also making Tulsa the best place it can be for people from all around the world to find opportunity here. That's been a big focus of mine. We created a program called the New Tulsans Initiative that is focused on making Tulsa as welcoming as it can be for our immigrant community. We've partnered with the YWCA to fund legal work for folks who are going through, need assistance going through the citizenship process. We are the first city in Oklahoma to host citizenship ceremonies every single month at City Hall. All of this is part of making Tulsa a truly global city. And I think so many of the other challenges that we face, whether that's issues around housing, around poverty, around crime, those issues are, you can take a big step forward in helping to address those issues if you're creating more employment in the community and you're increasing the wealth of the residents in that community. And I think that we can make great leaps forward in that regard by being on this global playing field.
Well, let me follow up with the business development. That's one of the mayor's most important functions traditionally, and it's been attracting new businesses to the city. And you, of course, touted Amazon and GreenHack, but it's also ensuring existing businesses can thrive and grow and assisting entrepreneurial efforts in the city. Given where you see a lot of small businesses in our city, which is on a knife edge, what will be your priority in a second term in assisting businesses?
No, that's a great question, and you're exactly right. And one of the things that we've done in the time that I've been mayor, we created a position in my office that solely focuses on small business and entrepreneurs to make sure that they have all the resources that the city can bring to bear to support them and assist them at their disposal. And that's his job every single day when he comes to work, is to reach out and be that kind of support for small businesses. And I say that as somebody who operated a small business myself before I got elected mayor. In the current environment, with the pandemic underway, it's been a tremendous challenge for small businesses in Tulsa. And probably less than a month into the pandemic, I realized that we had a public health emergency, but we also had an economic emergency. And so I convened a commission of some of the leading employers in our city to get together and talk about how Tulsa can emerge from this event as a stronger city. And a couple of the things that came of that, we created the Resilience and Recovery Program. That's a no-interest loan program for small businesses here in Tulsa, and have funded that with community development block grant funds from the city. And then Tulsa County has used coronavirus relief funds to help fund that program. And that's not just with local loans. We've also partnered up with the Tulsa Economic Development Corporation, which is a local nonprofit, to provide navigators. These are people who understand all the different loan options or grant options that are out there at the local, nonprofit, state, and federal levels for people and for business owners that they can access. Because, you know, when you're a business owner and you're trying to make ends meet, especially in the middle of a once-in-a-century global pandemic, you may not have at your disposal the knowledge of all of these opportunities that are out there. Well, we have navigators at no cost that work with business owners to connect them with those opportunities. Another big thing that came out of that commission is that we partnered with the Tulsa Chamber and Tulsa County. Again, they funded through their coronavirus relief fund allocation to provide personal protective equipment at no cost to small businesses here in our community that needed it to be able to operate. So, you know, there are things that we're we're working on in the short term just to get through this pandemic. And then there are longer term areas of focus for us that we're really focused on at the city from a structural standpoint to assist small businesses and to have the personnel in place that can assist them.
Just very quickly, do you think that your next focus, if you're reelected, will be on really helping the existing businesses and existing small businesses recover and thrive, or will it be in trying to win large manufacturers or, you know, to come to Tulsa?
I don't think that it's an either or, because when we get American Airlines to commit, you know, $550 million into their facility here to bring additional business here, there are all sorts of suppliers that then follow and assist them. Another great example that we worked through successfully this year was IC Bus, largest bus manufacturer, school bus manufacturer in the whole country, builds their school buses here in Tulsa, and their lease was up out at the airport, and we were able to work through and negotiate a lease with them that will keep them here for another quarter century at least, and hopefully longer than that. And through that process, you know, they were very candid and upfront in all of the local small business suppliers that helped them. So attracting these big employers, it has a ripple effect to helping local small businesses. But we also, of course, are going to be focused, because the bulk of employment in Tulsa isn't with the individual major employers that I mentioned. It's with small businesses. And so we want to be the best place in the country for them to operate and grow.
My guest today is Mayor G.T. Bynum, who's seeking a second term as mayor of the city of Tulsa. As we continue our series of conversations with Tulsa's mayoral candidates, I do have to ask you about a decision that just came down in the last day or so about the Police Oversight Board. You announced that you will not be pursuing a Denver, Colorado modeled board. Is some sort of review of police action still a priority for you?
Oh, yeah. There's no question that we are going to do that. I've just hit a roadblock now twice in trying to get the Denver model through the city council. And we've now been trying for a year and a half to get it through there, and just the votes are not there. And so there are other approaches that can be taken that achieve similar outcomes. It's just not cutting and pasting kind of a best-in-class model from Denver and putting it in here in Tulsa. But the overall notion of improving the engagement of citizens in the work of the department, I'm absolutely committed to that. Looking at best practices relative to policy guidance and making sure that the Tulsa Police Department is always a leader and not a follower when it comes to best practices, we definitely want to follow through on that. And then oversight and engagement, having that third-party entity that can look at the work of the department and tell us where we need to improve or where we're doing it well, I absolutely want to follow through on that. I'm just, when it comes to the Denver Office of Independent Monitor, I had hoped that we could get that set up as an office and funded by the council, but I've tried now twice and cannot get it through. So we're going to try a different approach, and I've had some really good conversations with Chief Wendell Franklin and Sheriff Vic Regalado about different things that they've seen around the country that we might be able to implement here. And so I'm eager to move forward on that. And I think it's important to point out that the interest in this for me is not because I think we have a bad police department, quite the opposite. I think that we have the highest standards in the country, both for recruiting and for training for our police department. I think we have the best police department in the country. But in this day and age, it's not enough for me to say that by myself or for the police department to say, hey, trust us, we're doing a great job. We have to have that outside entity that is looking at our work and can speak to if we're doing it right, say that, and if we need to do it better, be able to say that as well.
Well, we might have the highest standards, we might have the highest training, but there are still incidents that happen that give portions of the community a pause. Your equality indicators that you implemented definitely show that there's a great deal of mistrust between police and areas of the community. How are you going to work to reduce that mistrust?
Well, I think that the issue of trust very much comes from our approach on community policing. You know, I think the Independent Monitor or that third party monitoring helps. But ultimately, the key thing is that we have to get out of chronic understaffing. And you see this. This isn't unique to Tulsa. This has happened in pretty much every major city around the country. Over the last several decades, police departments in major cities have allowed their manpower to get to a level where officers are in reactive mode all the time. And here in Tulsa, when I came in as mayor, our officers, your typical officer, was spending over 90% of their time in their car responding to 911 calls. They are not out getting to know the people on their beat. They weren't out building relationships. And so that's why we've gone through the most rapid increase in hiring in the history of the Tulsa Police Department with 90 new officers a year for the last 3 years. It's not so we can arrest more people. It's to reduce that call load volume on each officer so that an officer has 35 to 40% of their shift where they're out of their car, getting to know the people on their beat and building those relationships. And I think that is how you improve trust. And that, by the way, was one of the major reasons that I selected Wendell Franklin to be chief of police. I mean, this is a guy who was doing community policing before anyone was talking about it. You know, at least any of us elected officials were talking about it here in Tulsa. He was just doing it instinctively over two decades, working his way up the leadership chain in the Tulsa Police Department. In successive roles, he was working to engage citizens in the work of the department. And now, as chief of police, he has the opportunity to do that citywide and has already established a citizen engagement unit that reports directly to him in the chief's office. And that's just one of many things I know he wants to put in place to improve that level of trust, which ultimately helps the police department do its work and make Tulsa a safer place.
Well, we're at the end of our time. I just want to ask you one last question. On August 25th, why should voters entrust a second term to you on their ballots?
Well, I'm asking for people to vote on August 25th because we have so much work to do. We have made tremendous progress in the last 4 years by setting aside those fights that used to divide us and instead working together to make Tulsa a truly globally competitive city. And that means making it a safer city and a city of opportunity for everyone and a city that we want to leave to the next generation. I have no political agenda. I have been a nonpartisan mayor, and I will continue to be that way over the next 4 years if the citizens choose to let me continue serving them. So I would be honored to have that opportunity and would ask for their vote on the 25th.
G.T. Bynum, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
G.T. Bynum is the mayor of Tulsa seeking his second term as mayor in the upcoming election on Tuesday, August 25th, as we conclude our series of conversations with Tulsa's mayoral candidates. If you want to learn more about his candidacy, visit his website at gtbynum.com. If you missed any of our conversations with our previous candidates, they're available online to listen at your leisure at publicradiotulsa.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.